So we are holding on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bey's five lines from the bottom. If you don't mind, Avraham Moshe, if you don't mind muting yourself, unless of course you have a question. Thanks. So Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bey's five lines from the bottom. We learned in the Gemara yesterday that the pasuk says that v'chibadto me'asos terachecha, about Shabbos, you have to honor it by not doing your regular ways, and we talked about that there's various aspects of honoring Shabbos that are implied in that pasuk. The first one, v'chibadto, means you should honor it, means by wearing special clothing. Oh, good morning, Pinchas. You wear Shabbos clothing.
What are we holding?
Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bey, five lines from the bottom. So we said yesterday that that honoring Shabbos includes v'chibadtoi, which means to honor Shabbos with special clothing. We said that Rabbi Yochanan actually would call his clothing mechabdusai, what the thing that honors me. We said, okay, the Shilta says it means specifically the Shabbos clothes. So we see that you're supposed to honor Shabbos with special clothes. So now we're going to continue on that topic of special clothes for Shabbos and on the fact that clothes are called covering. So the pasuk says, if Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bey is five lines from the bottom, the pasuk says Yeshaya is describing Renavua about what's going to happen to Sancheirav's army, how all of them are going to be destroyed. And the expression in the pasuk is Vesachas Kvodai, underneath his covered, Yekad Yekod, they'll be burnt, a burning will be burning, Ki Yekod Esh, like the burning of a fire. Because in other words, that's what happened. They got destroyed by a fire from the Malachim. So what does it mean, Vesachas Kvodai, under his covered? It means that underneath their covered was burnt, but not their covered itself, meaning that their bodies were burnt, but not their clothing. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Yechanan, the time A. Rabbi Yechanan is going according to his own Svara when he understands the Pasuk that way. As we said yesterday, Rabbi Yechanan called his clothes my honorers. So therefore, according to him, Kvodoy of this Pasuk also means the clothes of the people of Sancheirav's army. Their bodies were burnt by the Malachim, but their clothes stayed intact. One reason is that makes the ness all the greater. But another point is also this way, the clothing, some of them, it's very expensive clothing after all. In fact, the Gemara mentions that when the Pasuk says that 185,000 people were killed, that's not even the entire army. That's just the leaders of each platoon in the army. Each platoon or each whatever you call it in the army was at least 2,000 people. So you have the army is much, much larger than that. So the point is those leaders, obviously, you know, those sergeants or officers or whatever rank they are, you know, they have nice clothing, nice uniforms, whatever. And this way, they're available for the Jewish people to take as part of the spoils. Yeah. Anyway, Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni Omer Tachas Kvodei. Reb Elazar Omer Tachas Kvodei means Tachas Kvodei Mamish. Reb Elazar understands it differently. He understands the word Tachas can also mean instead of, like Ayin Tachas Ayin or Yishalom Tachas Asher. Now, Rabbi Elazar does not hold of this concept that clothes are called kavod. According to him, kvodoy over here means the person's body. So therefore, he understands the pasuk, the tachas kvodoy. Instead of his body, there'll be yekad yekod, there'll be a burning of fire, etc. Which means, in other words, so he comes out saying the same thing as Rabbi Yechanan, that their bodies were burnt and their clothes were left intact. But he arrives at that by a different way, not by saying that kvodoy means their honor, means their clothing, and therefore that underneath their clothing, meaning their body that's beneath their clothing was burnt, but the body itself stayed intact, but rather that instead of their body, there comes to be a burning. That their body was replaced by a burning. In other words, that their bodies were burnt to ashes, and the clothes were left. Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni Amar Tachas Kvodoy Kesreifas Bnei Aaron. Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni has a third opinion of it. He does understand Tachas. He does understand Tachas like Rabbi Yechanan, but he understands, meaning that it means under, not instead of. But he also understands Kvodoy like Rabbi Elazar, that it means the neshama. Therefore, he arrives at that it means that only their neshamas were burned, like the burning of the sons of Aaron. Ma'alahalan Strafas Neshama of a Gufkayim, by Aaron's son, Nadav and Avihu, their Neshamas were burnt, and not literally, because their Neshamas, their Nefesh of the Kis went up to the Kis HaKavod, and Moshe says about them that they're greater than Moshe and Aaron. But the point is, in other words, that their life was taken away from them by the fire, the Gufkayim, but their bodies were still intact. And you have in the Psukim in Parashat Shemini where Moshe tells Mishael and Al-Tzofen to take the bodies out and bury them. Afkan, Srefas Neshama, the Gufkayim, the same way over here, their Neshamas were burnt and their bodies stayed intact. So two different opinions of what happened. Is it that only their Neshamas were burnt and their bodies were intact, or is it that their bodies were also burnt and their clothing were intact, but three different ways of arriving, three different ways of arriving at that, whether we say that kvode means the clothing, or whether we say that kvode means the body, and whether we say that tachas means underneath, or it means instead of. Okay. Where do we know that in the Torah that changing your clothes is something is giving honor to Hashem? In other words, if you're wearing less expensive or less important clothing for a certain part of the avodah, then you should wear more expensive and better clothing for a different part. Shenema, we say every day in davening, that after he does the Trumas HaDeshen, when he does other avodas, and then there comes the point when it's time to take out the deshen, to take out the ashes outside the city, or outside the machna, whatever. So the pasuk is v'foshet es begadav. He should take off his clothing, v'lovash begadim achirim, and put on other clothing. Now the other clothing is big de kohuna. Although there's actually a machlokas on that. You have an opinion in the Gemara that actually he doesn't need all four big de kohuna in order to take out the deshen. But whatever. The point is that at least the pasuk is saying you should wear other clothing. V'tonet ve'davishma limdecha torah derech eretz. The Torah by this is teaching you the proper way of acting. Begodim shebishal behen kedeira l'rabbi al yimizik behen kos l'rabbi. The same clothing that you wore to cook a pot for your master is not the same ones that you should wear when you're mixing a drink for him, when you're mixing wine with water for him. Because in other words, when you cook the pot, your clothes get dirty. So therefore, you should be putting on nicer clothes when you're going to actually serve him in person and pour him a drink. The same way, in other words, so the clothes may get dirty when you're doing the Trumas HaDeshen, because it's a pot full of ashes, so therefore, and then fatty ashes also, because they're left over from the Korbanos, so therefore you should be wearing Begadim Acherim, cheaper Big De Kohuna, slightly more worn out, whatever, when you're doing that instead of the regular Big De Kohuna. So that's the point, in other words. So it would have been, like they would have had Big De Kohuna that are slightly worn, but are still kosher. Or you could have maybe that they're made from cheaper material. You have those many different grades of, the big kohuna are all made out of linen, but you have different grades of linen, right? So in fact, Marashah says a similar kind of thing. For example, when you're cooking, we're talking about wearing special clothes for Shabbos. The point is that the same metaphor applies. Don't be wearing the same clothing when you cook the food for Shabbos as when you're making Kiddush Friday night and pouring a cup. Okay. More about clothing. Amar Rav Chiya ba'Aba, Amar Rav Yechanan, Gnaihu l'Tamid Chacham sheyetzi b'min olam hamatoloyim l'shuk. It's a shameful thing for a Tamid Chacham to go out into the street with patched shoes. So the question is, Rav Acha b'Chanina nafik, when Rav Acha b'Chanina went out with patched shoes, so we see that it's okay. The answer is Amar Rav Acha b'Reder Rav Nachman b'Tlai al-Gav Tlai. The kind of thing where it's a problem is where you have one patch on top of another. So you have it was patched, and then the patch itself wore through, and you patch another one on top of the first patch. That's already a gnai for a Talmud Chacham to do. On the shoe. Yeah, they'll do. Yeah. Leather shoes, Pashtos. That's the definition of shoes in Halacha. You can patch leather. Yeah. So the Gemara in Brachas mentions this point. We learned this in Brachas as well. And the Gemara mentions a couple of other considerations. One, among others, is there's a difference between the winter and the summer, because during the winter, everybody's shoes are muddy anyway. They're not going to notice the patches that much. Another point is what you're saying, that there's a difference between whether the patch is on the sole or on the upper of the shoe, because if it's on the sole, nobody's going to notice it anyway. Yeah, but here we're talking about where it's on the upper and it's during the summertime, so then people are going to notice. So then it's a gnai that people should look down on Talmud Chacham like that. Similarly, the Amar of Abba Bachia Amar of Yechanan, Kol Tamid Chacham shenimtza revav al bigdoi. Any Tamid Chacham where grease is found on his clothing, chayev misa. He's chayev misa for that because he's making a chilul Hashem. And a chilul Hashem, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, is one of those things where even tshuva, even Yom Kippur, even Yisurim don't completely take care of it. It has to be the person passes away. That's when his kapara is completed. No, the Gemara doesn't mention murder over there. No, the Gemara mentions. Maybe the Rambam. The Rambam mentions that the person at Kol Gdola Bas Al Yada. I don't think the Rambam says that only his death. No, obviously if it was Ritzach B'Mezid, then obviously like any Mechuyav Misa based in then his death is a kapara for him. But if a person murders B'Shoigig or B'Onus or what have you, yeah, no. No, the that's what the Gemara says in Yuma. Yeah, they have the famous Shloisha Chalukah Kapara. You know, tomorrow or the next day, I think actually, Monday, we're starting to learn to get us a Tshuva in Tanya. And the Altareba quotes over there, the Braisa from Yuma, Shloisha Chalukah Kapara, that there's three different divisions. You have Esse, a person was over on an Esse, on a Loisese, or on something that's Chayav Karas or Misa Spastin. And then the Altareba doesn't mention that the Gemara goes on to say over there that then you have Chilul Hashem is in a category of its own. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. Okay, so then still, but you still don't do it in such a way that people are going to look down at the Tamid Chacham. You still don't want, for example, he's going to be wearing shoes with a patch on top of a patch, and everybody's going to look down on him and say, that's it. So the question is exactly what counts as a Tamid Chacham for this purpose. I mean, to a certain extent, actually, it says in Shulchan Aruch, nobody really is of the caliber nowadays to be considered a Tamid Chacham for certain purposes in Halacha. We're going to get to soon in the Gemara, we're going to get to that for various purposes, we have different definitions of a Tamid Chacham for different purposes in Halacha. And these aren't all of them. It's not exhaustive. There's other ones as well. But anyway, let's go on. Okay, so kol tamid chacham shenimtza revav al bigdoi. So for tamid chacham, if grease is found on his clothing, chayiv misa. Shenema kol misanai ehavu mavis, as the pasuk says, all those who hate me love death. Al tikri misanai ela masniai. Not misanai, those who hate me. This is the Torah personified as speaking in the psukim over there. Ela masniai, but the ones who make me be hated. Rashi says, "From a mass in atzman ba'ena abrius, they make themselves unattractive and disgusting in the eyes of other people." And people say, "Oyvei," to those who learn Torah, that they're so disgusting and so low class. So it causes that people hate the Torah. So that's the problem. It creates a chilul Hashem. Ravina Omer, Rivad Itmar. Ravina says the word is not supposed to be revav in this teaching, but rather revad, which Rashi says means shechazera. So in other words, Ravina would say, if there's grease on the Tamid Chacham's clothing, okay, it's not the best thing, but we're not going to say that he's chayiv misa for it. But if he has shechas zera on his clothing, then that's different. And the Gemara says, actually, v'loy pligi, they're not really arguing. Habi glima habi levusha. It depends whether you're talking about the outer clothing, the glima, which is like a coat, or the under, or the inner clothing, for example, a shirt. So you have, let's say, a shirt versus a jacket. So the inner clothing, you're right. Grease is not going to be such a big deal. People aren't going to notice it as much. So then only if you have shechas zera on it would it be a problem. As opposed to the outer one, the jacket, the coat, whatever, there even grease would be a problem. So they're not really arguing. Rabbi Hananel has a different explanation of Ravad. He explains it to mean blood. And he says the same thing. If it's on the underclothing, then fine. It could happen. For example, a person fell asleep in his, person is sleeping in his shirt and his underwear or whatever, and it happens. The Gemara in Nida tells us, they had bed bugs, they had lice, they had other kinds of bugs in their beds, and sometimes you could roll over one on top of one when you're sleeping and kill it. So therefore, fine. There's a blood stain on your clothing is not that bad, but that should be on your outer clothing. That's really unattractive and disgusting. Yeah. Okay. Since we're talking about clothing, my dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk in Yeshaya, the pasuk describes how Hashem tells Yeshaya to go oroim v'yochef, naked and bare, and he goes like that for 3 years. So we're going to say, what does it mean? You have the Rambam and the Radak and a couple of other Rishonim learn that it wasn't literal. It was only B'mare HaNavuah. He had a Navuah where he pictured himself walking around for 3 years naked. Whatever. The Gemara doesn't like that. The Gemara assumes that he did it literally. B'chlal, a lot of these things that you find, a lot of these strange things that you find in the Nevi'im did, you have. There are some of the Rishonim who learn, including again the Rambam and the Radak and several others, who learn that it was only B'mare HaNavuah. Another example is Yechezkel lying on one side and then on the other side for hundreds of days at a time. There's a lot of other examples where they learned that a lot of these things were b'mareh ha'nevuah, whereas you have the Gemara and the Medrash usually take it more literally and derive various details from that. Anyway, the pasuk goes on to say that so the pasuk says kasher holach abdi yishayo orim v'yachiv, just like he went naked and naked and barefoot, the same way the pasuk goes on to say the same way Mitzrayim and Cush are going to be taken captive by Sancheiriv, and they're going to be taken into captivity naked and barefoot. There it may mean literally naked, or it may also mean, as the Gemara is going to say over here, just like with patched clothes. So what does it mean? It means that he was naked, not literally naked, but in the sense that he's wearing worn out clothes that are not appropriate to him. And that he's barefoot doesn't mean literally barefoot, it means with patched shoes. Now, obviously, we just said before, Talmud Chacham is not supposed to do that, but here Hashem told him to explicitly, so therefore that's different. And the point is, again, like we were saying yesterday, you have sometimes Hashem will tell a Navi to do something to accompany his Nevuah to demonstrate, to bring it down, l'mata me'asara tefachim, to show that it will come true. So this is an example of that. Just like Yeshaya went around in these torn clothing, and torn shoes or whatever, so it's a simon that's exactly what will happen to Mitzrayim and Cush when they get taken into Golos by Sancheiriv. Okay. Tanan Hossam. So now, since we talked about revav on clothing, so let's talk further about that. We learn in a Mishnah in Mikvois. The Mishnah is talking about over there what is considered a chatzitza on clothing when you're toveling it. You know, nowadays we're only familiar with toveling people and dishes when we buy that were made by a goy. But you know, of course, when you have the dinner of Tumah V'Tahara, your clothes can also become tameh. You often have in the pasuk v'rochatze, you know, v'chibes v'godav, or this week's parasha, this week's parasha chokas. You have by the par adama, for example, v'chibes oisif as efer aparas v'godav, v'chibes akoyin v'godav, etc. So you have, you know, sometimes you have to tovel clothing. So what is considered chatzitza on clothing? So the Mishnah says, revav ala mardeya chotzitz, if you have on a saddle blanket of a donkey, which is makabel tumah, because a person sits on it. So if you have grease on it, chotzitz, then it's a chatzitza. Reb Shimon Gamliel ad ki iso heitalki. Reb Shimon Gamliel says it's only a chatzitza if it's at least the size of an iso heitalki, which is a kind of coin. It's a little bit smaller than a quarter. But smaller than that, Reb Shimon Gamliel says you wouldn't be makbid on. The general rule with chatzitza is like this. Min haTorah, a thing is a chatzitza only if it covers most of the keli or most of the person and you're makbid on it. We talked about this back in the nuns when we were talking about chatzitzas in hair when a person tovels. Midrabanan, it's one or the other. If you're makbid on it, even if it's a tiny amount, or if it's most of it, even if it covers most of the surface, even if you're not makbid on it. So here, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying a spot of revav of grease less than the size of an iser etalki, nobody's going to care about on a saddle blanket. Therefore, it's allowed. Whereas the Tanakhama is saying it doesn't matter how small it is, people are going to be makbid. Continues the mission of Alab Godim on clothing mitzad echad enichotzitz. If the spot is only on one side of clothing, then it's not a chatzitza. Mishneitz dodin chotzitz. But if it's on both sides, in other words, if there was so much grease that it penetrated all the way through to the other side of the clothing, chotzitz, then it's a chatzitza. Rabbi Yehuda omer b'shem Rabbi Shmuel af mitzad echad chotzitz. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Shmuel that even if it was only on one side, it's a chatzitza. So that's thus far the Mishnah. Now, Bominate of Shimon Lakish Rav Chanina. So now Rish Lakish asked Rav Chanina, Maudas, when it comes to the saddle blanket, we're saying that if you have a spot of grease on it, it's a chatzitza. What, how many sides? Mitzad echad mishnei tzadin. Does it have to be, is it enough to be a chatzitza if it's only on one side? Or is it only a chatzitza? According to Rabbi Shmuel, that is. According to Rabbi Shmuel, who we're saying makes a distinction between one side and two sides, So, in other words, the Gemara is saying that the Gemara is understanding that you have the Tanakhama is saying that you need on clothing it needs to be on both sides. So according to him, for sure, there's no question on a blank on a saddle. Obviously, it has to be on both sides. There's no reason the saddle should be any more important than clothing. But according to Rabbi Shmuel, who's saying that with clothing it's a chatzitza on one side, what would he say about a saddle blanket? Amalei, so Rav Chanina answers him, Zu loy shamaiti. I didn't hear from my Rebbeim an answer to that explicitly, but kayotze ba shamaiti, but I heard about something similar, and therefore we should be able to deduce it from that. The Tanan, we learn in the next Mishnah there in Mikvos, Rabbi Yosi, Emma Shabanoin, when it comes to clothing of banoyim, and we're going to define soon what banoyim are, mitzad echad, then it's a chatzitza, even if it's only on one side. V'shel bur mishneit stadin, if the clothing belongs to a bur, which means like we have in Pirkei Avos, what's the lashon over there? Ain bur yurei chet. That a boor means somebody who doesn't know Torah and doesn't have good midas. So such a person, meaning me, what? Yeah, so a pustiak, yeah. So like below an amaoret even. So such a person, mishneit studin, such a person, his clothing would be a chatzitza only if the stain is on both sides. Now you have to figure, v'loy tehem ardas chashuva bibigdei shel amaoret. Surely you're not going to say that a saddle blanket is more important than the clothing of an amaoret. If according to Rabbi Yosi. And the point is that Rabbi Yossi apparently is also talking within Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, because only the Rabbi Shmuel is making the distinction between one side and two sides. The Tanakama just said that it needs to be that it needs to be going through both sides to be a chatzitza. So Bapashta, so Rabbi Yossi is going within Rabbi Shmuel's svara also, and therefore, if we're saying that you need two sides in the case of a bur, then surely you also need two sides. It needs to be going all the way through in the case of the mardas. Okay. So my banoyin, what do we mean by banoyin? Usually the word banoyin means builders, but why by builders would it be any different than anybody else, that there would be a problem with a stain on only one side of their clothing? This refers to Tamar Chachamim, their entire life is spent building the world, like we have every day in davening. So therefore, so they're the ones we're saying that if there's a stain even on one side of their clothing, as we said before, kol tamid chacham shenimtza revav al bigdei chayav misa. So therefore, for him, if he has a grease stain on one side of his clothing, even though it didn't go all the way through, then that's already considered a gnai, and therefore he would clean it. The point is, in other words, he would have to clean the clothing to get rid of the grease before he would tovel it. Therefore, he's makban, and therefore it's considered a chatzitza. In fact, actually, there's a pirush on Mishnayos called Mishnah Achrona. You can find it printed in the Yochanan Abaye's Mishnayos. He asks, so why does the Mishnah use such a strange expression, banoyim? According to this, just use the expression tamid chachamim. Usually, you have tamid chachamim versus amei haaretz. Why all of a sudden banoyim versus bur? So he says because banoyim over here can also mean even people who are not tamid chachamim per se, but also people who are engaged in maisim tovim. For example, let's say he doesn't give an example what he means specifically, but let's say, for example, people who are involved in collecting and distributing tzedakah, let's say, or people who are involved in other mitzvahs. So the same kind of thing. They may not be tamid chachamim, they may not be particularly learned in Torah, but they also have the responsibility to look neat and presentable in front of people and not make a chilul Hashem by people are going to say the same thing. People who are involved in those mitzvahs are schlumps and whatever, and therefore the same thing. Okay. So now let's talk about the various definitions of a Talmud Chacham for different purposes. What is the kind of Talmud Chacham? What is the definition of a Talmud Chacham for the purpose that if he says, I recognize this lost object, even though he doesn't have an actual simon on it, then you return it to him? Now the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia, famous thing over there, we all learn it as kids, that if the Talmud Chacham does not lie except in three things that we say over there, b'masechta, b'purio, v'ushpiza, they ask him, have you learned a certain masechta, not for the purpose of asking him a shaila in it, but just to see like how much he knows, he'll say I didn't learn it in order not to look like a Baal Gaiva. If they ask him, Rashi says over there, did you have relations with your wife, he'll say no in order to be tzniastik, or Tosfos says over there, it means if they ask him, did you sleep on this bed, he'll say no, because in case you find shichas zera on it, for example, then it'll be ignited to him. And ushpiza, if they ask him, he stayed by a certain person, was he a good host? He won't say yes, because he doesn't want that other people are going to start taking advantage of the guy. Anyway, so the Gemara says over there that if the only thing he ever lies about is those three things, then we know he's a Talmud Chacham and we can return him in Aveda B'Tviya Sayin. So here the Gemara gives a different definition. So when he's particular about his shirt to turn it the right way out. Meaning sometimes you put on your shirt, your undershirt even, inside out. The Talmud Chacham will be particular about that and turn it the right way around. Because again, when you see the underside of it and you see the stitches, it looks bad. It's Meguna, and the Talmud Chacham is careful that it shouldn't look Meguna. Which, by the way, Mephoshim said, that's the connection with what we said before about the stain on the one side of the garment. Therefore, if it weren't for this thing that Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, if he had a stain on the outside of his garment, big deal. He'd flip it inside out, and the stain would be on the inside, and nobody would notice. But he being a Talmid Chacham, he can't do that. If the stain is on the outside has to stay the outside. Therefore, he has to wash it. Now, how does this definition fit with the definition in Bava Metzia? So one possibility, some of the Rishonim learn that it means you need both. So let's say, for example, if you've ever had a chance to ask him about any of those three things, and you see that he lies about them but not about anything else, well, let's say you have this person, you have a Talmid Chacham who you haven't had any conversations with before, but if you see that he's makbid on his choluk, then it means also he's of that caliber. It means you can assume that he's also of that caliber. The other possibility, though, is that maybe Rabbi Yochanan is arguing with the Gemara over there. That maybe you have two different definitions. That you have the definition over there, and you have the definition over here. And in fact, for example, so the Rambam brings only the definition over there, that he doesn't lie about those, that he lies about those three things, but not anything else. He doesn't bring the definition over here about that he turns his shirt inside out. On the other hand, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings both of them. Okay. That's the point the Gemara is talking about over there. When you have what's called clay on Puria, you have, for example, new kalim that just came from the store or whatever. A person doesn't yet have a simon on them because he hasn't used them really yet, but he has a tvius ayin. He can still recognize them just on sight. So if he's a Talmid Chacham, we can return it to him, and otherwise not yet. Okay. So that's the thing. If you have had dealings with him before, then you can know whether he lies about only these three things and nothing else. I think also Tosfos talks about over there, or other Mephoshim talk about over there. Maybe also, I mean, if he lies in order to bring shalom between people, like we have Aaron Hakohen, right? Yeah, in this week's parasha, you have that. But you, of course, the basis your kol shloshim yom, because he used to make peace between people. We know the famous thing: he would go to each person and say the person really feels bad, etc. So that kind of thing is also legitimate. But so if you've had dealings with him before, and you know that he's honest in everything except for those few things, then yeah. But if we're talking about, so again, one explanation is, here we're talking about, you don't know the person that well to know that, but you see that he's makbid al chaluk. So that itself tells you. Or it could be that it's two different definitions that are arguing with each other. Okay. V'amar Rabbi Yechanan, and then Rabbi Yechanan says, here's another definition of a Talmid Chacham for a different purpose. Stop, lovely. I need to know every so often that. Yeah, okay. I just need to know every so often. Thanks, just in order to pace myself. Thank you. Okay. So, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Ezeu Talmid Chacham Shemamanin Oisik Parnas Alatzibur. What is a Talmid Chacham for the purpose that you can appoint him a parnas, a leader over the community? That is Zesha Shoylin Oisik Dvar Halacha B'chol Mokim V'Omer. When you can ask him something in Halacha, any place in Shas, V'Afilu B'Maseh V'Omer, and he's able to say it. Vafilu b'masechta kala, even masechta kala, which is one of the masechtas ketanis, it's not learned very commonly, so most people are not familiar with it. So if he's familiar not only with the regular shas that everybody learns, but even masechta kala, then that shows that he's a Talmid Chacham who's of the caliber to be appointed a parnas al hatzibur. Tosfos discusses that may mean, first of all, Tosfos says it may mean the other way around. Masechta kala, on the one hand, is very rarely learned. On the other hand, it's also fairly short. It's also fairly short and easy. It talks about the dinim. It begins with the din kala b'loy bracha asur l'bayla kedida, that if you don't make the sheva brachas by the chuppah, then the kala is still also to her husband. And it's fairly straightforward. You can find it in the Masechtas Ketanis, printed in the back of Nezikin in a standard shas. But it's fairly easy, so it might mean the other way around. It might mean that so over here, Tosfos actually says that what it means is that, and also Tosfos says another possibility is that Masechta Kala might mean the Masechta that was taught at the Yarche Kala that year. They had Yarche Kala in the yeshivas in Bavel twice a year, in Adar and in Elul, and each time they would be learning a certain Masechta, or they would be learning Hilchas Yomtiv, the halachas of the Yom Tovim that are coming up. So if the person is familiar at least with those, so he knows how to answer something in that Masechta, or even only in Masechta Kala, he only is familiar with that one, then at least he's roy to appoint him a local parnas. As opposed to, if he doesn't even know that, then not. What is the kind of Talmid Chacham where the people in town are supposed to do his work for him? which Rashi explains. We have a Gemara in Yuma that tells us like this. On the one hand, you have Hashem tells Moshe in Parashas Ekev, "V'asisa l'cha aron eitz," you should make for yourself an aron of wood to keep the second lochus in. Then you have in Parashas Truma, which chronologically is later because it's after Moshe comes down from Har Sinai. Hashem tells him, "V'asu aron atzei shikim," they should make an aron of wood for the Mishkan. So in other words, the point is, like, Moshe is told to do it, but because Moshe is a Talmid Chacham and is busy learning Torah, therefore everybody else has to do it for him. So we learn from that, therefore, that Talmid Chacham is supposed to be supported and helped by the people so he can learn Torah full time. So what is a Talmid Chacham for that purpose? That is the kind of Talmid Chacham who abandons, who doesn't do his own chafotzim, his own needs, and is involved with cheftzei shamayim. And is involved with learning and teaching Torah. This is only as far as when we say the people are supposed to do his work for him. That means as far as making parnasa for him, something which Rashi says, something which he can't work on because he's too busy learning Torah and his life depends on it. So they're not obligated, let's say, for example, to get him a new car, but they're obligated to get him to get him his food that he needs in order to his food and his basic necessities. Okay. V'amar Rabbi Yechanan, ezeu Talmid Chacham. What is the definition of a Talmid Chacham in general? If they can ask him a halacha anywhere, and he will be able to answer it. So l'may nafkamina, well, we already gave definitions of Talmid Chacham for various purposes. So it means l'manuya parnas ala tzibur. It means, like we said before, to appoint, as far as appointing him a parnas, a leader over the tzibur. And it depends. I b'chadim asechta. If what it is he's familiar with one particular masechta, then ba'asre, then you can appoint him a local parnas, a local Rosh Hashiva. If he's able to answer anywhere in Shas, anywhere in Torah, where you ask him, then Beresh Vesivta, then he's of the caliber to be appointed a Resh Vesivta, the head of one of the big central Masivtas, who was one of the leaders of the Jewish people in his times. Now, how does this fit with what we said before about a Filib Masechta Kala? So one possibility is before we were talking about a parnas as in just a local leader, not necessarily a Rosh Hashiva. It could be a Rav or something. Whereas here we're talking about appointing him a Rosh Hashiva. So therefore it's different. But according to Tosfos, actually what it's doing, it's basically kind of repeating what we said before in order to make this distinction. In other words, if you have, for example, he's only familiar with Masechta Dekala, which again, according to Tosfos, the second explanation means the Masechta that they taught at the last Yahweh Kala, then if he knows that, then he's worthy of being appointed a local Rosh Hashiva. If he knows all of them, even the ones that weren't learned recently, then he deserves to be appointed a higher level Rosh Hashiva. There's also an explanation that what it means is, in both cases, it means that he knows everything, but there's a difference. You have the kind of Talmid Chacham where, when he's learning Shabbos, for example, then he's able to answer questions in Hilchos Shabbos. But let's say, for example, if while you were learning Shabbos, you asked him all of a sudden a question in Kodshim or a question in Nezikin or whatever, he wouldn't be familiar with it off the top of his head, because right now his head is in Shabbos. So that would be the kind where you can appoint him a local Rosh Hashiva, as opposed to if he can answer on the spot any place in Shas, then he deserves to be a national Rosh Hashiva. And you have actually at the beginning of the Masechta, you had where at the very beginning on Daf Gimel, we had where Rav had asked Rebbe a question in Hilchos Shabbos, and Rebbe answered him, and Rav Chiya afterwards tells Rav, you should realize right now Rebbe is dealing with some other Masechta. You shouldn't be asking him in Hilchos Shabbos. As it is, he gave you a good answer. So Rebbe was an example of that, where even though he's in the middle of learning Nezikin or Kodshim or Taurus or whatever it is, he still has the head to be able to answer right on the spot an answer in Shabbos. He's the kind who can be Beresh Vesivta. He's the kind who could be, but as opposed to if Rebbe had said, right now, I don't know, because I'm busy with some other area of Torah, then he would have been, then that would be the caliber to be a local Rosh Hashiva. If I remember correctly, the Tashbit says that Gilyan Shas over here, Rabbi Akiva Eger, refers to a Truva from the Tashbits from Rabbi Shimon Ben Samach, one of the late Rishonim, who deals with this question. The situation was that there was a Talmid Chacham who had put somebody in Cherem for disrespecting him, and the Rashbats was asked the question, is this guy actually a Talmid Chacham who's of the caliber to do that? And then, so he goes through Ogham, so among other things, he goes through Ogamar over here to discuss what exactly we mean, what is a Talmid Chacham of the caliber to be able to do that, to be Menad Lekvoda, it's called. So I don't remember what conclusion he comes to, okay, anyway.
What about the question, can you ask, you're not allowed to ask someone a question, right,
Right. Oh, so that's the thing. So then that's what we're saying. So if if you know that they're of that caliber, that even then, even though Reb Chiya was saying to Rebbe, you shouldn't do it, but it was saying to Rav, I mean, that you shouldn't do it, but yeah. Because he could have embarrassed him, right? Okay, fine. Okay, so all of this was meant to explain, so this was a digression because we were talking about the clothes of Banoyim. We said Banoyim means Tamid Chachamim, so we digressed to discuss different definitions of a Tamid Chacham for this purpose. Reb Shimon Lakish, I mean, Reb Shimon Lakish has a different definition there of what Banoyim means in that Mishnah. When we say that if there's grease on one side of it, then it's Chatzitah. Elu Kalim Ho'ol Yorin Ha'boin Mim Dinas Yam. It refers to clothes of bathhouse attendants that come from overseas, meaning Rashi explains they have nice towels or nice robes that the people wrap themselves in after they take a bath. So therefore, so according to this, then Banoyim would be the Aramaic word for a bathhouse is Bay Bonny. So therefore, Banoyim would be people who are involved with the Bay Bonny, meaning the bathhouse attendants. They have these fancy towels or robes or whatever. So those are the kind people are makbid on that there shouldn't be a spot of grease on them even on one side. So the Gemara says, "Lemember the chibrinin who." So are you telling me that these kalim ha'ol yorin are white? Because that's the only reason why anybody would be makbid on a grease spot. If they're colored, the grease is not going to be so noticeable. The problem with that is, "Val amar lahu Rabbi Yanai labanav." We find that Rabbi Yanai says to his children, "Banai al tikburuni lo bekalim levanim lo bekalim shchorim. Don't bury me in white clothing or in black clothing." Levonim, don't bury me in white clothing, Shema loy ezga, because I might not have the schus, I might end up among the ones who are in Gehenim, who are black, they're like a shulik dator, they're like the bottom of a pot being burnt by the fire of Gehenim. The eik achosin, mein avelim, then I'm going to be sitting there like a chosin in white clothing among the avelim. I'd be very out of place. Veloy and shchodim, don't bury me in black clothes. Shema ezke, because I may have the schus, I'll be in Gan Eden. Ve'eyek oval ben chasanim, and I'll be like an oval the other way around. I'll be in black clothing among all the chasanim who are wearing white clothing. We know in the old days, for example, it used to be common to wear white clothing for Shabbos. Now you have, for example, the picture of the Tzemach Tzedek, the famous picture of the Tzemach Tzedek that we have, was actually a goy looked peeked in through the window and drew it on Shabbos. That's why he's wearing white clothing, because they used to wear white clothing for Shabbos. Ela, so Rabbi Yanai tells them, you should bury me b'kelim ha'ol yorin ha'boin b'dinas yam. Bury me in the kelim ha'ol yorin, in these bathhouse attendants' clothes, ha'boin b'dinas yam. Alma sumkin, you know, so we see that they're red or some other intermediate color between white and black. Because we just said, he said, don't bury me in white clothing and don't bury me in black clothing. If he's telling them to bury them in kelim ha'ol yorin. Now, we have to ask, I mean, look, you know, we're talking in Gan Eden, it's going to be the world and the Shamas anyway. There's no clothing over there anyway. So what's the difference? So one possibility is that the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says the clothing, the tachrichim, that a person is buried in Olam Haza has an effect on his neshama in Olam Haba. So therefore, okay, it means in a ruchniistic sense, the clothing that he wears there is going to be similar to the clothing. Or the other possibility is talking about what's going to happen by Tchias HaMesim. We know the Mesim are going to get up by with their clothing that they were buried in. So therefore he wants to fit in basically. Okay. Nowadays we all just use white tachrichim, right? Anyway, so the point is Alma Sunkinin, who so we see that these Kalim Hol Yorin are red or reddish or brown or some other intermediate color. The answer is like Kasha Hobbit Glimi Hobble of Vushi. Again, like we said before, there's a difference between the underclothing and the outer clothing. The ones are reddish. The inner clothing. So you have, in other words, like there's underwear or like there's a shirt or something, and then there's an over robe over it. So technically, right. So no, in other words, what we're saying, among the kalim ha'ol yorin themselves, you have the underclothes which are white, and then you have the overclothes which are reddish. So the same thing, when Rabbi Yanai is telling them to use the Ekelim Ho Yorin, he doesn't mean the underclothes, he means just use the outer clothing, which is red or some other color between white and black. Okay. But in other words, when it comes to the inner clothing, those are white. Those are the ones, Rish Lakish is saying, those are the ones the Mishnah is referring to by the clothes of Banoyim, that if there's a grease stain on one side of it, it's a chatzitza, because people are makbid on those. Because that's two different definitions. So you have Rabbi Yochanan saying it means Tamid Chachamim, and Rabbi Shlokish is saying it means bathhouse attendants. Okay, I mean, Bichlal, by the way, when we talk about this, that we're saying Kol Tamid Chacham Shenitzer Revav Al Bigdoy, besides that it just means his clothing, there was also an explanation. The Ben Yehoyada says, other people say that it means also his midos, that a person's midos are called his clothing. The word midah itself, Allah Bashakain, midah bad. So therefore, it means also Tamid Chacham is responsible to make sure that his midos are in good shape and that there's no stains on them and other things that make him unattractive and disgusting to the world. Yeah. It's a big responsibility. To a certain extent, now, I mean, I was saying before, it says in Shulchan Aruch that really nobody is of the caliber to be called a Tamid Chacham nowadays for certain halachas. For example, this thing about being menad l'kvodo is not so simple nowadays based on that trova of the Tashbit. You have another din, for example, that if a person insults a Tamid Chacham, he owes a litra of gold. We don't necessarily do that nowadays. On the other hand, for certain other purposes, for example, some of the things we're talking about over here, all of us, any frum yid to a certain extent, is like a Tamid Chacham nowadays because, you know, the goyim and the non-frum and the not yet frum Jews look up to us. You know, we're their example. You know, we're their example of what a frum yid should be. And if we act in a way that's okay. Continues that we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel I'm a Kaplan Chula, where Rabbi Shmuel had said that if Yom Kippur is before Shabbos, then you're allowed to fold clothes that you wore on Yom Kippur to wear them again on Shabbos, because the Kedusha of Shabbos is higher than that of Yom Kippur, and you're allowed to make beds from Yom Kippur to Shabbos. And also you have the fats of Korbanos that were brought on Shabbos that are left over, you're allowed to burn on Yom Kippur. So we're going to talk about that now. Tana Rabbanan, the Pasuk says, Oilas Shabbos b'Shabbatai, the Oila of each Shabbos on its Shabbos. What do we learn from that? Now, those words are extra. You have, Uvyema Shabbos, Shnei Klasim Neshona Tzmimim, Oilas Shabbos b'Shabbatai, Al Oilas Atam Minesk. What are those words, Oilas Shabbos b'Shabbatai, adding? Obviously, you have to bring this Oila every Shabbos. It means, limit our Chelve Shabbos to Kraven B'Yema Kippurim. It comes to teach us that the Oila of one Shabbos can be brought on a different Shabbos, namely Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is also called Shabbos. It's also called Shabbos Shabbosin. So it means that the Chalavim, the fats of Shabbos, can be offered on Yom Kippur, which is on the next day, which is on Matzah Shabbos and Sunday. Yochol Afshar Yom Kippurim b'Shabbos. You would think then the other way around, that fats that are left over from the Korbanos of Yom Kippur can be offered on Shabbos. No, Tamid Loimer b'Shabbat Toi. Therefore, it says on its Shabbos. The Vav is a mute, so it means only on its Shabbos, not a different one. So therefore, Yom Kippur has a lesser kedusha than Shabbos. Therefore, you can't have the leftover fats from Yom Kippur can't be burned on Shabbos. You have to make sure they're all burnt before Shabbos begins. This is talking about when Yom Kippur and Shabbos are one after the other, which we don't have in our kriyos nowadays. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says no. We learn the divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva Omer, no. When it says Oilas Shabbos for Shabbat, it means limit al chelve Shabbos to craven be yomtiv. It means that if yomtiv comes out on Sunday, then you can burn the leftover fats from Shabbos on yomtiv, because yomtiv is also called Shabbos after all, like we have Mimacharas Shabbos by Sfira. Yochol af b'Yom Kippurim. You would think that you're also allowed to burn them on Yom Kippur if Yom Kippur comes out on Sunday. No, Tamid Loimer b'Shabbat. Again, he uses the same mute as Rabbi Shmuel, but says that the mute is as far as Yom Kippur, rather than as Rabbi Shmuel is saying as far as from Yom Kippur to Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Kishtim Taloimer. If you analyze the machloikas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva and get down to the underlying principles, what it is divrei Rabbi Shmuel and the dorim and the davus craven b'yomtiv. You'll come out like this. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you're allowed to bring Dorim or Nedavis on Yom Tov. Now, we know there are Korbanos Tzibur that are brought on Yom Tov, of course. There are also, there's a person's Korbanos, the person's individual Korbanos that they're chayev to bring on Yom Tov, an Olas Re'iyah and a Shamei Chagiga. There actually you have them, everybody agrees you can bring the Shlomim, it's Machlokas, but Shamei Basilol in Beitza, so whether you can bring the Olas or not, because after all, you don't eat any of them. But the Gemara analyzes the Machlokas over there and says that actually you have, on top of that, you have a Machlokas. What about Nedarim or Nedavis? What about, let's say, a person during the year was Menadav, an Olo, a Shlomim, or what have you, and now they want to bring it? Are they allowed to bring it on Yom Tov itself, or do they have to wait for Chol HaMoed? So, according to Rabbi Shmuel, Nedarim or Nedavis craving the Yom Tov, you are allowed to bring them on Yom Tov, even though you could have waited until Chol HaMoed. Therefore, we don't need any pasuk to teach us that you're allowed to burn the leftover fats of Shabbos on Yom Tov, because if you're even allowed to bring new korbanos on Yom Tov that didn't have to be brought on that day, for sure you should be allowed to burn the leftover pieces of the korbanos from Shabbos. Therefore, he would say, why do we need the pasuk Olas Shabbos of Shabbat to teach us about Yom Kippur? And then the ribui teaches us that you can burn the ones from from Shabbos on Yom Kippur, and the Mi'ut from the Vav teaches us, but not the ones from Yom Kippur on Shabbos. According to Rabbi Akiva, Nedarim and Adavis cannot be brought on Yom Tov. If you, during the year, were Menadav an Oilo or Shlomim or what have you, you have to wait until Chol HaMoed to bring it. So therefore, you need a pasuk to teach us that the leftover fats from the Karbonis of Shabbos can be burned on Yom Tov, because otherwise you would have said, if you can't bring Nedarim and Adavis, maybe you can't burn those leftover fats either, and therefore we need the pasuk to tell us that you could. So the pasuk will tell us that you can. On the other hand, then the Mi'ut would tell us, but that's not the case with Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur has a Kedusha close enough to Shabbos that you can't. Okay. Amar Abzera. Ki havina bavavel. When I used to be in Bavel, remember Abzera grew up in Bavel and learned Torah over there, and then eventually he moved to Eretz Yisrael. So when I was in Bavel, Hava Amri, I used to say, Hodetanya. Now we learn in a braisa like this. We learned earlier in the Masechta that before Shabbos, they used to blow six tkiyas to tell the people that Shabbos is coming and it's time to stop work. What happens when a yump, now you have to talk about what happened, and also on Motzei Shabbos, so we have to talk about what happens with those tkiyas when Yom Tov or Yom Kippur comes out on Friday. And also, you have to talk about what happens when Yom Kippur or Yom Tov comes out after Shabbos, starts Motzei Shabbos. So now you have, you are allowed to do certain kinds of malacha, as we're going to see. You have to make Havdalah. So we learn in a braisa like this, Yom Kippurim Shechalias Erev Shabbos, if Yom Kippur comes out on Erev Shabbos, lo yhoyu tokid, they would not blow shofar on Yom Kippur to tell everybody that Shabbos is coming. Because after all, Yom Kippur anyway, you can't do malacha. And that if Yom Kippur comes out on Motzei Shabbos, you do not make havdalah. You don't even not only you don't make regular havdalah over the coast, but you obviously can't because Yom Kippur. But you don't even say vatodienu and hamavdim and kodesh lakodesh. So I used to think divrei hakol. He says Reb Zera, I used to think that's according to everybody, both according to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. I didn't think that that's relevant at all to their machlokes. Okay, they're arguing about whether you can burn the leftover fats of Shabbos on Yom Kippur and vice versa. Everybody agrees you can't burn the leftover fats from Yom Kippur on Shabbos, and they have machlokes. Can you burn the leftover fats from Shabbos on Yom Kippur? Rabbi Shmuel says yes. Rabbi Akiva says no. So I used to think, says Rabbi Zera, when I lived in Bavel, I used to think, okay, so that's the question about the tekiyas and about havdalah is not relevant to that machlokes. They would both agree with that. Ki salikna lahasam. But then when I went up to there, meaning to Eretz Yisrael, ashkechise liYehuda breded Rav Shimon ben Pazi, I found Yehuda, the son of Rav Shimon ben Pazi, the Yosef Akama, he was sitting and saying, Rabbi Akiva, that is specifically only according to Rabbi Akiva, who considers Yom Kippur to be on an equal level with Shabbos. So therefore, you don't need tkiyas to distinguish one from the other. Just like, you don't have, if Yom Kippur comes out after Shabbos, you're not going to blow shofar on Motzei Shabbos to tell the Kohenim it's okay. You can go ahead and then you can go ahead to tell you according to Rabbi Akiva, don't stop burning the fats of Shabbos because now is Yom Kippur. The same way we're not going to make tkiyas before Yom Kippur to tell the Kohenim that Yom Kippur is over and you can't burn them. So it's specifically according to Rabbi Akiva. De'ida b'shmol, kivin de'omah chel v'shabbos kreven b'yom kippurim. Since Rabbi Shmuel says you are allowed to burn the fats on Shabbos on Yom Kippur, if Yom Kippur is Motzei Shabbos, litka, according to Rabbi Shmuel, you should have to be blowing shofar on Motzei Shabbos in order to signal to the Kohenim, ki hechi d'lehebe yadi de'chel v'shabbos kreven b'yom kippurim, so that they should know that with this tkiya, that now that Yom Kippur is a lesser kedusha than Shabbos, and therefore that they're able to continue burning the fat of Yom Kippur on Shabbos, and this way also they will know in a future year if Yom Kippur comes out on Erev Shabbos, then they'll understand that now we should realize, okay, Yom Kippur is more kal than Shabbos, therefore we have to finish burning the fats of Yom Kippur before Shabbos. So this Mishnah on the face of it would be only according to Rabbi Akiva. Va'amina le'ana, but says Rabbi Zera, I said to Rabbi Yehuda, not necessarily. Koinim zrizim heim, because you could argue the koinim azoris, they know what they're baki. They don't need a simon. In fact, Rashi says, when you have the pasuk Yodom Mishpatecha LeYakov, they're the ones who teach halacha to the Jewish people. So we don't need tkiyas in order for them to know what the dinim are of Yom Kippur relative to Shabbos. They already know it. Okay. But Makshisha, the son of Rav Chista, asked Rav Ashi, "Mia minan koinim zrizimhem? Is it really true that we say that koinim zrizimhem, and therefore we don't have to make a signal for them?" V'atnan, we learn in a Mishnah that every day in the Beis Mikdash they would blow shofar. They would blow the chatzotzeris rather. The minimum number of times they blew the chatzotzeris on any one day was 21, because they would blow during the Tumid Shal Shachar and during the Tumid Shal Ben Abayim, and the total number of kiyas on a regular day was 21. There were three when they opened the gates, 9 by the Tumid Shal Shachar, 9 by the Tumid Shal Ben Abayim, so that's 21. And then the Mishnah goes through over there various other numbers of tkiyas that they would blow in the Beis Mikdash on different times. One of them, it says, is on Friday, they would blow an extra 6, Shalosh Lahavdil Sa'al Min Malacha, 3 to tell the people to stop doing Malacha, Shalosh La'avdim and Kodesh L'chol, and 3 more to distinguish between Kodesh and Chol. So we see, in other words, they blew 6 tkiyas in the Beis Hamikdash. The Pashtus, that means they're blowing for the sake of the Kohenim to hear as well, otherwise they don't have to do it in the Beis Hamikdash. So we see the Kohen, we don't necessarily assume Kohenim is Rizimim. They don't necessarily know what time Shabbos is, and therefore they need to be warned. The answer is Kedamar Abaye L'Shaar Ama to be Yerushalayim. The answer is just like Abaye says in another context over there about that it's meant for the other people. Namely, you have the Mishnah in Yuma describes how describes a number of presents that various people gave to the Beis Mikdash at different times. One of them is the famous Hilni Amalka gave a Nivreshes, which is a chandelier or something like that, bright, that hung over the door of the Heichal. And it was positioned in such a way that when the sun started rising, the sun would reflect off it, and it would be everybody would see the reflection, and therefore they would know it's time to start saying Shema. So now the Gemara asks over there that, what do you mean? We see that we say in the Mishnah in Tamid that, and the Gemara brings it over there in Yoma, that the Anshei Mishmar, the Kohenim who are on duty in the Beis Hamikdash, actually say Shema even earlier than that, because they have to get busy with the Avodah as soon as Alois HaShachar comes. So they're saying Shema even before Alois HaShachar. So what do you mean that they're waiting until Netzachama to say? And the answer is, Abaye says, you're right, the signal is not meant for the Kohenim, it's meant for everybody else in Yerushalayim. Hochanami, the Shaar Amah, to be Yerushalayim. The same way over here, we can say the 6 tkiyas are meant for everybody else in Yerushalayim. The Kohenim themselves of Zoriz, they know when Shabbos is beginning, so they know to stop on their own. But everybody else needs a signal, and therefore they would just do it. They would do it in the Beis Mikdash because it's a high place, and this way everybody's more likely to hear it. But it wasn't primarily pitched at the Kohenim; it was pitched at everybody else. So we can still say Kohenim is risen. Okay. So the question is, the litka, still, shouldn't we argue that, okay, so far we're saying that, fine, this that we're saying, that you don't do the tekiyas, if Yom Kippur, rather, comes out on Erev Shabbos, you don't do the tekiyas before Shabbos, because either that's only according to Rabbi Akiva, that there's no need for it, because anyway they can't burn the fats of Yom Kippur on Shabbos. And according to Rabbi Shmuel, we would say you should blow it. Or maybe we say Kohenim is Rizimheim, and therefore even Rabbi Shmuel would say there's no reason to. But there should be a different reason we should have to blow a shofar, not for the sake of the Kohenim, but for the sake of everybody else. You should be blowing a shofar in order that they should realize that Yom Kippur has a din different than Shabbos. You're allowed to do Knivas Yerek beginning from Mincha time and onward. What is kniva? So Rashi explains that it means that you're preparing vegetables to eat. You're pulling the leaves off the stems in order to make them ready. Later on, you're going to cut them up into small pieces and make them and cook them or make a salad out of them or whatever. So you're allowed to do that from now. In general, Yom Kippur is the same as far as Shabbos, as far as Malacha. But there is this exception of knivas yerek and something else that we're going to mention soon that you're allowed to do on Yom Kippur. I mean, mincha olamayla. So both according to Rabbi Shmuel and according to Rabbi Akiva, we should be blowing shofar on Yom Kippur when it comes out on Erev Shabbos to tell the people, to make the people realize, the regular people, not the Kohenim, the regular people who are not Zoriz and don't know the Halachas, to inform them that Yom Kippur has a din, it's more lenient than Shabbos, and you're allowed to do this Knivas Yerek. There's a different explanation. Many Rishonim learn that Knivas Yerek means cutting off the parts of the vegetables that are not quite so fresh, that are a little bit rotten. So they're maybe not completely rotten, because that would be Burim, and that wouldn't be allowed on Yom Kippur either. But like they're like halfway there, you know, whatever. And like maybe you could eat them al yedei hadchak, but you don't really want them, and you're allowed to cut them off on Yom Kippur. The bad spots, let's say, yeah. So why don't we do that? So Rabbi Yosef says the reason is because we don't like this blowing shofar on Yom Kippur or on Shabbos is a shvus. It's an isur d'rabbanan. Midaraisa, fine, it's mutter because it's not a malacha. It's called a chochma. Midrabbanan, though, it is also, this is relevant, by the way, every year when we blow shofar, the end of Yom Kippur, this is why we have to make sure to wait until the fast is over before we blow shofar. Okay, it says maybe you can do it bein hashmashas, fine, but whatever. The point is that, so it is a shvus. We're not going to be matir a shvus. We're not going to be doicha a shvus. Just lahatir, just to inform people that it's mutter to start cutting up vegetables. Which actually Tosfos points out, we could have used that answer before. The same thing. If we were arguing we should blow shofar to inform the Kohenim that Yom Kippur has a lesser kedusha than Shabbos, and therefore we're allowed to burn the fats of Shabbos and Yom Kippur if Yom Kippur comes out on Sunday next year. But the Gemara could have given the same answer, the Gemara couldn't have given the same answer because just the opposite. It's a chumrah telling you you have to burn them now so they don't become noiser. As opposed to over here, we're talking about for the sake of a heter to tell you that you should be allowed to be allowed to prepare these vegetables. We're not going to be doicha, the shvus of blowing shofar, in order to allow people to do that. V'rav shisha breid of idioma. A different answer. Shvus kroiva hitiru, shvus rechoika lo hitiru. A different answer is, if we were talking about something where we need a heter right now, then yeah, we could blow shofar for that. But when we're talking about something where it's not even for this year, it's for a future year when Yom Kippur comes out some other day during the week, that they should know Yom Kippur has a lesser kedusha than Shabbos, and you're allowed to do this knivas yerek, we're not going to be doicha or shvus now on Yom Kippur for the sake of next year that they should realize what the din is on Yom Kippur. But if it was something that they need right now on the spot, then yeah, we could do that even if it's in order to be matter. Okay. So the question is, we learn in a Mishnah in Chulin, Yomtiv Shechalias Erev Shabbos, if a Yomtiv comes out on Friday, Toikin V'loy Mavdilin, then we say, so again, we say you do the sixth kias before Shabbos. So even if Yom Tov comes out on Erev Shabbos, you still do the sixth kias on Yom Tov. Matzoi Shabbos Mavdilin V'loy Toikin. And if Yom Tov starts Matzoi Shabbos, then you do Havdalah, you don't do the kias. We say Vatodienu in Davening, and we say Baruch HaMavdil Ben Kodesh L'Kodesh when we do Yaknahaz. So based on what we're saying, if we're saying, according to the Shisha Breder of Idi, that we do blow shofar even when it's to tell us that something is mutter, but only when it's something that we need to know, it's mutter on the spot. Ba'amai, so according to him, Litka, we should be blowing shofar. Because they should know that they're allowed to start shechting and doing other malachos oichel nefesh right away now that it's Yom Tov. The fact that we're saying you don't do tkiya implies that we don't even allow it just for the sake of a heter. Now, elam achavarta, kedin Rabbi Yosef, so obviously it's clear the answer has to be. We have to stick with Rabbi Yosef's answer that the reason is it's in general, we don't do the tkiyas to tell people that it's mutter to do something. We do the tkiyas to tell them that a day is coming when it's also to do malacha, like Shabbos or Yom Kippur or whatever. We don't do it to tell them that now it's mutter to do malacha, whether it's right now or whether it's long term. Okay. Now this that we said, that you're allowed to cut the vegetables, again, according to Rashi, to cut the leaves off the stems and prepare them, and according to everybody else, to cut away the bad spots, that would be also when Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos. That heter that you have on Yom Kippur, but I mean Cholamayla, is only when Yom Kippur is on a weekday, but not when it's on Shabbos. Amar Amona Tana. So the Amona says, actually, we learn a brisa like this. How do we know that if Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do this knivas yerek? Talmud Lema Shabbosoid. Therefore, the pasuk calls Yom Kippur Shabbosoid, meaning shvois, meaning at the time when you have to rest. Meaning at the time when you have to rest from malacha. Not Yom Kippur. Sorry, it means Shabbos. Shabbos itself is called Shabbosoid, Shabbos Kodesh. So Shabbosoid implies there has to be an extra rest. And we have, so there has to be an extra rest. Now, Lamai, and now as far as what, is that relevant? Ilema la malacha, do you mean just that the Torah is telling us you have to rest from malacha on Shabbos? You don't need that, because if lo sasa ko malacha. The pasuk says in a number of places, you're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. Ela lava knivas yerek. Obviously, therefore, it must be teaching us that even knivas yerek, even where you usually have a heter on Yom Kippur to do knivas yerek, but on Shabbos, because it says Shabbos, then you're not allowed to. So in other words, usually, in other words, Rashi says like this. Now, when you get down to it, I mean, these vegetables have already been picked. There's obviously no malacha involved in cutting the leaves off them. So therefore, if the pasuk is telling us chabasin, then it must mean something if you were to do it, you would be over on an esser. Now, obviously, on other Shabbosas, on every Shabbos, you're not allowed to do it. So even though on Yom Kippur, as the Gemara is going to say soon, we usually allow it, mipnei agmas nefesh, as we're going to discuss soon, but nevertheless, when it's on Shabbos, then you can't override an isur d'oraisa for that reason. Rashi says, what about the fact Yom Kippur itself is also called Shabbosin? The answer is, but Shabbosin of Yom Kippur means that you have the various inuyim, that you have to rest from eating and drinking and wearing shoes and so forth, not about malach. Okay, so Rashi is learning that it's d'oraisa. Tosfos says not necessarily. It may just be an asmachta that you're not allowed to do the knivas yerek on Shabbos. Whatever it is, it's also. There's an explanation that the Ramban and a couple of other Rishonim give that you have like this. We know there's the malachas of Shabbos, but we know, for example, a person hypothetically could be doing all kinds of things on Shabbos that are not malachas, but still they're not resting on Shabbos. Imagine, for example, a person spends the whole Shabbos carrying furniture around, moving their furniture around their house. They're not being over on any malacha, but they're still being over on Shabbos, and they're still not the spirit of Shabbos. So therefore, that's... not speaking like you do on weekdays and not right. So this is all included in that idea of Shabbosin, right? You have at the end of Igeres HaKodesh in Tanya, you have like one of the last pages over there. You have a line where the Alter Rebbe talks about that you should realize that Shabbos doesn't just involve the definition of malacha. We only know from Torah Shabbat Peh after all. That's the importance of Torah Shabbat Peh. It's not just carrying heavy bricks and things like that. And there's a word levad over there, which you find in some editions of Tanya. You find it, and in some you don't. So the Rebbe talks about, and you find in Shurim Sefer Tanya, that whether we have that or not depends on how we understand what Shabbos is supposed to be. Is it that you actually are over on Shabbos, maybe not the lava of Shabbos, but you're over on the esse of Shabbos by carrying around bricks and stones and furniture and whatnot? Or is it that, no, you're only over if you're actually doing the malachas? Okay, anyway. So the word Shabbos in teaching. So it's two different ways of looking at it. Again, you have the Ramban's way and you have the other Rishonim. So right. So that's why you have the two different Girsais in the Alter Rebbe's letter, right? Okay. Fine. So Shmamino, so that proves that you're not allowed to do the Knivas Yerek when Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos. Now, Rav Chiya Ba'Abba says in the name of Yechanan that no, if Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos, much of a Knivas Yerek, you are allowed to do the Knivas Yerek. And we said as far as what? So the Braisa we just quoted seems to show that you can't do Knivas Yerek on Yom Kippur when it comes out on Shabbos. How can Rabbi Yechanan say that you can? The answer is Rabbi Yechanan would say, no, you're assuming that the word Shabbosin is teaching us that there's something that you're not allowed to do over and above the malachas, namely Knivas Yerek. Not necessarily. The word Shabbosin just teaches us you're not allowed to do malacha. Valavra, Allah be'esav aloysa, it just means that you're not allowed, it just means that if you do a malacha on Shabbos, not only you're over on a loysa, you're also over on an esse. So here we're talking about the Knivas Yerek. Tosfos says would be that you're cutting it while it's still attached to the ground, or you're cutting it into very small pieces, which would be a tolda of toichin. So you should know the Braisa is telling us if you're doing that, you're not only being over on an alois esef, lois sasek, omalacha, but also on the esef of Shabbosin. Okay. Tanya Kavaseh de Rabbi Yechanan. Now we have a Braisa that supports Rabbi Yechanan's understanding, because the Braisa says, Yemek Kippurim Shechali is for Shabbos, Mutu B'Knivas Yerek. Okay, so therefore, Rabbi Yechanan has a Braisa on his side. If Yom Kippur comes out on weekdays, besides that you're allowed to do the Knivas Yerek, you're also allowed to quack nuts, you're allowed to open up pomegranates, beginning from Mincha time on Yom Kippur, and the reason for all of that is because of Agmas Nefesh. Now, what does that mean? Rashi explains, like this, it makes the inui all the greater. Like this, you're supposed to be afflicting yourself on Yom Kippur and not eating. When you're able to prepare food and you can't eat it, that makes the inui all the greater. So therefore, you're allowed to do it. It makes the affliction of Yom Kippur from the fasting all the greater. On the side over here, it brings a different explanation from the Balamur, that the idea is, like this right away. Like this right away, and as soon as Yom Kippur is over, you'll be able to start cooking the food. Like this, if you first have to start cracking the nuts and opening up the pomegranates and taking off the leaves from the vegetables or whatever, it's going to be, there's going to be more agmas nefesh. It's going to be longer before you're able to eat. Hold on. Okay. However, Dvei Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara gives an example. Dvei Rabbi Yehuda, Makan Vikarba, for example, in Rabbi Yehuda's household, they would do kniva on cabbage, on Yom Kippur, beginning from Mincha time, so they have the cabbage ready to right away on Matzah. The Gemara says, Dvei Rabba Gardi Kari, in Rabba's household, they were cutting or peeling pumpkins, to prepare for the meal on Matzah and Matzah Yom Kippur, kivin dechazav, beginning from Mincha time, but kivin dechazav dehabakom mecharfi, then he saw they started to do it earlier, they were starting to do it even before Mincha time, and that's Aser, Amalahu, so he tells them, Aser Igur to Bimah Rav, Meshmeid Rabbi Yechanan, and Aser, a letter came from the west, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, that it's Aser, he said that in order that they would accept it. Like this, if he himself just said, you should know it's Aser, they wouldn't necessarily listen to him. By telling them, by attributing it to Rabbi Yechanan, then this way they would be more likely to accept it. And in fact, the actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that the minhag eventually became based on this, that you don't do it even when I'm mincha olamayla, so you know, for one thing, so you don't come to do it before mincha, and therefore the actual halacha nowadays is there's no preparing vegetables or cracking nuts or whatever on Yom Kippur beginning when I'm mincha olamayla. Everything that you can't do on Shabbos, you can't do on Yom Kippur. You have to start all the preparations matzah Yom Kippur. Okay, Hadron Aruch Ve'eluk Sharim. Shkoyach everyone. Anybody want to ask anything? Okay. It's not.